And we welcome you in to a Tuesday edition of My Car Guru on this May the 4th. And we have Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru, with us. Hey, Lenny.
You know, weather has presented itself boldly the last couple of days. Yesterday, one of our buildings on right behind Powell's got struck by lightning. And had a building. It's a metal building, so not good to be touching the walls at that point. But the power went out at Powell's, and then, you know, of course, today I'm broadcasting from the deep underground tornado shelter at my house. No, I don't have one. You know, sometimes I wonder about that. I see the devastation that takes place. You know, my house is just a two-story farmhouse, you know, stick-built, you know. Those seem like the kind of houses that get kind of blown away. I guess brick holds up better. I didn't have enough money. I'd like to have built a brick house in 94, but I couldn't afford it. Brick was a lot more expensive than vinyl.
Yep, it can
probably
be.
Still is.
For sure. Yeah, it still is. Yeah.
Well, I woke up this morning and I made my first mistake was digging through my notes. I came across my New Year resolutions for 2021. So I'm kind of bummed out just a little bit. There's still time, though. It's just May, right?
Yeah, most of the year still left.
Yeah, so there's eight of them. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yeah. I kept it simple this year. I wanted to not give myself too many. You know, usually we set too many goals for ourselves and we don't end up reaching any of them. I'm doing really good on three of them and really bad on five. I'm not going to confess which ones. I am doing a better job walking my dog. I'll just say that's one of my better ones.
Well, the dog's happy about that.
Walk with Shady at least three times a week. So I am living. I almost lost her several months ago. She's about a 12-year-old mutt, kind of a lab hound mix, big, tall, long, lanky legs. And she's only pretty to us, but she her digestive system just stopped working. I mean, it literally, she would eat food and then just, you know, barf it all up and just couldn't. It would not stay down. And so they end up having to do surgery, and just, they thought she might have a blockage and all that. No blockage. It's just sometimes this happens to dogs, you know. So I didn't know anything about that. So anyway, we give her a couple pills every day, and that keeps things working, you know. But you don't realize how precious something is until you – till the threat of losing it is there. Everybody knows that dogs aren't that important compared to people. But I tell you what, I see a lot of folks put so much value, you know, in material things, and sometimes it's easy to get caught up on that. And there wasn't a single material thing on my list. I've just got to start executing. You and I talked about that at the beginning of the year. You don't typically do that, do you? Set like New Year's resolutions.
No, not really as far as writing them down and that kind of stuff. I might, you know, think about some in my brain or something and try to keep them. But as far as making a list, I don't make a physical list or anything.
You know, it's so important in business for people to set goals, though. You know, our sales team, our service team. If you have a standard that you're working toward, performance tends to improve. Also, talking about that goal on a daily basis. I mean, we talk to our salespeople. You know, we think about an automobile salesperson. They wake up at the beginning of the morning or the beginning of a month at zero. They have no idea how much money they're going to make for the month. They're going to make a commission based on what they sell. Now, that's not just auto salespeople. That's anybody that sells something that aren't on some kind of a guarantee. And, you know, that takes a certain degree of self-confidence and courage. And some people reach the end of the line. They've tried multiple jobs. They can't find something that they're happy with. So, you know, maybe I can sell cars. You know, I've heard that so many times interviewing people. They come into the dealership and we run an ad for salespeople, and they walk in, they sit down and said, Well, my family always said I was a good talker, you know. They think that they can make it in a very difficult competitive business. And some of them can. You know, Tim, so much of it is personality driven. In order to do what you do, you know, you've got to have obviously an open mind and creativity and be able to, you know, express things well. There's not one person in a million that could do what you do. How's that for a compliment?
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know about one in a million, but
I guarantee it. I bet it's less than that. I mean, you think about, well, maybe not one in a million, maybe one in 157,000. But you know, it's a skill set, and you know, whether you are selling cars or flipping burgers, I mean, you have to have certain skills to be able to do that well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember many years ago, I went to the PALS school, I think they call it the Business Excellence Institute. And I thought it was funny that somebody said, well, Lenny, you really need to go to this school, that PALS. I said, you mean like the hamburger place? They said, yeah, you need to go to, they have a school where they train folks, they teach you how to run an efficient business and, you know, how to hire people well. And then one of the biggest parts of the agenda that they talked about was just how carefully PALS hires people and interviews them, the testing process that they do, the interview process. And, you know, you think about who's going to work at PALS, well, it's typically younger people. You know, you do see some older people in there as well, but, you know, most of them are coming to work there maybe as their first or second job. And you wouldn't think that that job would require an extensive interview process. But, you know, you look at the line that's outside of a PALS. I mean, just yesterday I wanted to go get a tea. I said, well, I'm not going to wait 20 minutes to get a tea because I drove up and the line was all the way out on the highway. That doesn't just happen. You know, that food is okay. It's okay. You know, there's nothing tremendous about it. It's consistent, right? I mean, it's not like they're serving filet, you know, or something like that.
Right.
But there's a line around that place. And, you know, when you drive around it, you get this feeling that they care about cleanliness because the outside is immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't even cover up their dumpster. They want you to see that. I remember Tom Crosby talking about the fact that they don't have a fence around their dumpster. They want people to see it. Isn't that weird?
Hmm.
You know, to think that a dumpster is a marketing tool? But that's the way they looked at it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here you have a company that's hiring teenagers, and the experience is typically good. And when they screw up, they make it right. So I learned a lot from them as far as interviewing. I realized how inadequate my hiring process was, so we made some changes. We're still not doing personality profile evaluation. I think that is so important, you know, to find out how people fit, you know, into your organization and to really understand, you know, what their personality is. You put the wrong person in a role that has the wrong kind of personality, somebody that's maybe short-tempered or, you know, not compliant. There could be so many different attributes that just don't work, you know, for somebody waiting on the public. You know, I've had people with short fuses. You know, you don't have somebody with a short fuse as a service advisor or even as a cashier,
mm-hmm.
you know, because occasionally they will get abused by folks who have short fuses.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, hiring the right people with the right type of personalities is so critical. And we work hard to do that. We could work harder and we could be a little bit more diligent. But, Tim, right now, I mean, the pickings are slim. I don't know if you've heard people talking about the employment market right now.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is really slim pickings as far as people who are wanting to work. And there are a lot of reasons for that. We won't get into that. But we will get into automatic versus manual transmissions right after this break.
And we're back here on My Car Guru for this Tuesday morning with Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru.
You know, there used to be a lot of good reasons for a new driver to learn how to drive a manual. You know, to start with, car stick shifts were cheaper. Typically, that was the standard equipment for a car. There was no upcharge for a manual. They were also more efficient, and they were a little bit quicker. The long-standing barrier has been that the learning curve was a little steep compared with an automatic.
Mm-hmm.
You said your first car was an automatic. Your second car was an interesting car. You said the Mercury Capri.
Mm-hmm, a 73 model. It was a candy apple red, a really pretty little car.
Now, weren't those made overseas? Weren't they made in England or something?
I think
the
so.
Capri?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but my first experience with shifting a manual was on the column. You know, three on the tree, as we refer to it.
Right.
Three-speed manual transmission on the column. My Bronco that I have right now is that way. They didn't even build from 66 to, I think, 72 or 73 was the first year. For that period of time, they were all column shifts. And then Ford finally decided, well, let's take this thing upscale a little bit. And so they added an automatic transmission and a cigarette lighter, you know.
Yeah, I had a 74 Ford pickup, a white one. Like, I called it the Uncle Jesse truck, like Dukes of Hazzard, you know, Uncle Jesse had
one. Yeah.
And it was three on the tree.
Well, things have changed. In a nutshell, young drivers' reasons to learn a stick shift now seem to be pretty far down the list as far as priorities. You know, the good thing about a manual transmission is that you don't have to worry about any millennial car thieves, because most of them are so used to driving automatics.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was important early on to teach my kids how to drive manuals. I don't know, rite of passage, whatever you want to call it. But you look at the statistics in the U.S. auto market, it's that the automakers are pretty much trying to eliminate manual transmissions. Manual transmissions used to be better as far as performance. They're not anymore. They're both great, you know, and you wonder why people don't like them. You know, it's kind of like vinyl records versus compact discs, whereas the vinyl record is the manual and the compact disc or the MP3 player, you know, is the automatic. They're both great, but you know, just a lot of people don't have them anymore. People don't use turntables. But, you know, you look at the actual usage rate. According to cars.com, only 1.3% of new vehicles are sold in the United States with a stick. That's down from 3.4% in 2010. According to the EPA data, the peak year for manual transmissions was 1980, Tim. And that, I thought it would be earlier than that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would have thought it'd be early to mid-70s at least.
Yeah, the peak was 34.6% of production in 1980. I'm trying to think what cars would have had. I guess a lot of import cars, probably. Hondas and Toyotas and mm-hmm. things like that back in 1980. I don't remember as a Chevrolet dealer back then. We were a Mazda dealer. But still, we sold probably, gosh, I would say 90% of the vehicles that we sold to Mazdas were automatic. We just didn't order them with manuals. They didn't sell very well around here, but maybe they did worldwide, I guess. This is based on the United States. You know, so what changed? Well, it's pretty simple. Automatics have just gotten much better. I'm sitting in a Lincoln Continental right now. It's my wife's car. I'm actually not in the tornado shelter. I'm sitting in a parking lot in my wife's car. You know, this car has a 9-speed automatic transmission. The shifts are imperceptible. I can't imagine a manual in this car. It's really not the kind of car you put a manual in. But there was a big debate this weekend on the back porch of my nephew's house between me and my brother about the value of a manual transmission. My brother, 66-year-old doctor out of Oak Ridge, Tennessee, he insists that his personal car has a manual transmission. And I said, what do you like about it so much? And he said, well, it's just that I'm more involved in driving. and he's a driver. He's a car guy for sure. He just enjoys the experience. I said, but you do realize that if you took a car, the car that you're thinking about buying to Road Atlanta, and drove a manual versus the PDK, the automatic alternative to that, the PDK, the automatic, is going to go a whole lot faster around the track. He said, I don't care. I'll have more fun. So anyway, a lot of people just, you know, see that as the thing. You know, efficiency is probably the most important factor in sculpting automobiles and their markets. Transmissions dominate in the U.S. According to the it's because we're lazy. There also could be cultural factors at play. You can't overlook the fact that this is fuel, and most of the near century in existence automatics have been less efficient than manuals. But that's now changed. I mean, the F-150 that I drive a lot has a 10-speed automatic, and it shifts gears so many times you can't keep up with it. The computer is making a decision based on the throttle position, the speed, you know, how I guess it knows where I am and where I'm going, because it automatically it has a learning function and analyzes the way you drive. And that's kind of scary. My transmission knows me better than some people do. But automatics also got cheaper. You can get a 2020 Ford Mustang with a 6-speed manual still, but the 10-speed automatic is an extra cost option. They have figured out how to, even though it's 10 speeds, it's about half the size, Tim, in terms of physical size, of a 3-speed transmission that back in the 70s. They've figured out ways to make them more compact. Also, automatics are maintenance-free for the most part. There are many automatic transmissions that are sold in this market that require zero maintenance. As a matter of fact, they're sealed. And, yes, they do have fluid in them, but you never have to change it. There is an access place where you can pump it out. If you want to change the fluid, you can. They realize that some people like to do that. I just can't imagine leaving fluid in a transmission for that long.
Mm-hmm.
But the automatics are so good. Now, you know, this particular car I'm sitting in right now has paddle shifters on the either side of the steering wheel. One has a plus on it. One has a minus. If I want to shift this this Continental manually, I can. When would I want to do that? Well, you know, if I'm driving through the mountains, I've used it a few times. You know, if I want to downshift and I don't think that, if I want to play with it a little bit, I can actually do that. A lot of folks see those when they're buying new cars, and you'll see those on higher-end cars or higher-end models of common cars, just like the Nissan Rogue, for example. In the Platinum level, it has paddle shifters. It does not have that, you know, on the base model. So if you see those, it's probably something that you'll never use. If you use it accidentally, you might be in for a little surprise because the car's going to downshift or upshift because of that. Just another reason to get to know your car a little bit. There are some manuals out there if you still want. Mazda Miata, for example, you can buy it with a manual. There are a lot of other choices, but there are fewer and fewer going around. So that's the story on automatics versus manuals, and we'll be back here in just a minute.
And back here for the final couple of minutes of My Car Guru this Tuesday morning with Lenny Lawson.
I'm becoming a Buick collector, Tim.
Buick collector.
I had a 49 that I bought. That 49 Roadmaster, mm-hmm. And it had been customized a little bit and not very well, and so we made some improvements to it. We did find some severe suspension issues that we had to fix. Yesterday, I put on some wide white walls and some Docky Bowl wheel covers, and completely transformed the way that thing looks. I'll post them on the My Car Guru website. But also yesterday, I had a call several. It's probably a month ago now. A gentleman called me and said that he had a Buick for sale. So I think I talked about this yesterday, but I actually went and picked it up. Buick Electra, 220, a 1976 model, big car. Electra 225,
mm-hmm.
Landau Limited. You remember? You know what Landau means? You know what a Landau roof? Do you ever remember hearing that?
Yeah, vinyl roof.
Yeah, well, it's a vinyl roof that only covers half of the top.
Oh, that's right, half the top, yeah.
Yeah, with a Landau. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so this car is white with a white Landau top. It's a two-door, which is unusual for a Buick Electra 225. Most of those were four-door.
Mm-hmm.
Has the big 455 V8. And, Tim, the car has 7,000 actual miles on it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It's really not my thing, you know, as far as these big boats. But I know for a fact that I'm probably going to find it a good home. Before I do that, this car has been sitting. Think about that. He parked it in 1977. He kept a trickle charger, pulled the battery out, one or the other. He would start it once a month, but not move it. The car just sat. We actually picked the car up and drove it back to the dealership. He had to put a battery on it first. Tim, it was riding on its original tires, and they were not in good shape. You can imagine the flat spots on that thing for sitting for that period of time.
Mm.
But we put that thing on a lift, and it's probably one of the largest cars that's ever been on that lift. It is longer than a Suburban.
Yeah.
That's how big cars were, and 76 was the last year of the full-size GM cars. In 77, they all of them, all the big cars became mid-size cars, and all the mid-size cars became compact cars. It's the end of an era, but it's something that that I'm going to do my best to try to preserve. We shall see. I don't know whether I'll put this on Bring a Trailer and try to sell it or sell it. Knows, but anyway, if you want to see it, come on down to Gateway number 2 beside Powell's in the Chevy store in Greenville, Tennessee, and I'll have it on display there for the next few weeks anyway. But that's it. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, and we appreciate it as always, My Car Guru, for this Tuesday morning, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Lenny.